Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Longtime and respected Boston sports anchor Steve Burton was discussing how Cam Newton could have a problem fitting in with Bill Belichick in the Patriot way. Take a listen.
You say he comes in humble. I don't know if he's got humility behind him. You know, I understand when guys come to New England, they have to be humble. But here's a guy that I'm not so sure he's familiar with humility.
Okay, Shannon, do you believe that Cam has been humbled enough to fit in with the Patriot way?
I do, but I want to know what's he basing that on? Because I've seen guys come there. Now, we look at Cam, and maybe you don't like his outfits. Maybe you don't like the way he conducts himself, and maybe he's arrogant. But it's hard for me to believe. I think the thing is that what they're missing is that just because Cam was outwardly arrogant doesn't mean that Tom Brady isn't arrogant or Peyton Manning or John Elway. You've been around guys. They believe in their ability. While Cam is running on the field doing this right here, you watch the way Tom Brady runs on the field. And you don't tell me you don't think he said, I'm the baddest mofo out here.
He does. I agree. Okay.
That's why he, mm-hmm. To have that.
I am with you. Yes.
You have to have that. I look at guys, Skip, and they said, there is no way Corey Dillon, his last game in Cincinnati, Corey Dillon threw everything he had on in Cincinnati, threw it up in the stands.
He did.
Shoulder pads, helmet, shoes, everything.
Mm-hmm.
He went in, led the league. I think he led the league in rushing, won a Super Bowl. Man, they say Randy Moss. He had wore out his welcome in Minnesota, wore out his welcome in Oakland.
He basically quit in Oakland.
Quit? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to New England and now the person in the lock and not a person had a bad thing to say about Randy Moss.
Model citizen.
Ocho Cinco.
Okay. Yep.
Now you talk about his personality.
Mm-hmm.
Fits right in. Now Cam, ain't no way Cam can fit in. Whoa. No, ain't no way Cam can do. Why?
Okay, there's one big difference. Cam plays
quarterback. Yes. He plays quarterback. And I think that's the thing, Skip. We're not used to seeing the quarterbacks dressed like Cam, behave in the manner of Cam, doing the suit, all that.
Mm-mm.
But to think that, you know what, hey, to think that he can't conform to a system where he go, he knows what the expectations are. So if you understand the rules, I don't believe it's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
He was allowed to behave the way he behaved, and I didn't have a problem with it. I think early on he could have shown some maturity as far as leadership, but I don't have a problem with that.
Nor do I. Okay, let's go back to Steve Burton. I know a lot of people outside the New England area do not know Steve Burton, the longtime sports director at CBS in Boston. For those who don't know, his father played for the Patriots pre-Belichick back in the 60s. He was a running back for the Patriots. Mm-hmm. So Steve Burton grew up black in Boston, a city that historically has had, dare I say, sort of a racist underbelly to it because the Red Sox were the last MLB team to integrate.
Yeah.
And we know what the great Bill Russell went through as the first black superstar in the 60s. He wrote about it. He's spoken about it many times. Mm-hmm. The racist behavior that he endured throughout his years with the Celtics in Boston, right? So Steve Burton has a feel for that, for the Patriot way, and for New England fans. And it did catch my ear when he said he's not sure about Cam's humility. Well, I'm not either because I want to be sure he doesn't have any humility but because that's who he is.
Right.
He needs to go in there and be Cam, right?
Correct.
Cam steps onto the football field with supreme athletic arrogance in a different way, but has the same goal as Tom Brady does.
Right.
When Tom Brady runs out of the, what I call him, Psycho Tom.
Let's go!
Yeah, let's go! Okay, Cam does it different ways, but it's the same mindset of, I'm better than any of you out here, and I'm about to show all of you.
Right.
I'm about to back it up. What does Cam Newton do when he scores touchdowns? Well, you alluded to it. He does this.
Right.
What does this mean? I am revealing the S on my chest.
Right.
I am going from Clark Kent to Superman. Mm-hmm. I'm about to go in the phone. I just went in the phone booth and undressed, and I've got my Superman cape and outfit on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has any New England Patriot under Bill Belichick ever had a personal stylized touchdown celebration like that?
No.
No, not one. Gronk would spike it, but spiking is traditional anyway. He just did it with nuclear force.
Right.
And sometimes Brady would go down there and he'd take the same ball and he'd spike it again.
Right.
That's as close as they got to individual touchdown celebration. Okay, what has Cam Newton always been? In a good way, because it's part of his DNA. He's got some prima donna in it. He's a look at me guy. Look at my wild attire. Look at my wild hairstyle. I'm going to shatter the mold because I'm going to go win MVP and I'm going to do it my way.
Right.
Well, now he's gone to only one way called the Patriot way.
Correct.
So again, this isn't an organization that just discourages individual behavior. This is an organization that prevents and prohibits.
It
suppresses any individual behavior.
Yeah.
So back to your point, Belichick has taken shots on players with some, they all had different kinds of baggage or troubled past, whatever it was. And we can go from Corey Dillon to Randy Moss to Aaron Hernandez.
Right.
They knew what was going on at Florida. Albert Haynesworth, and you said Chad Ochocinco, now Chad Johnson again.
And he released Albert Haynesworth.
He did. Josh Gordon, he even took the shot at Antonio Brown last year, right?
Yes.
He took him for about a minute, right? And then that blew up in their face. Or maybe last year would have been very different for Tom Brady. But the point is, all of those guys came to a locker room that was basically run by the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I've often said, I think Tom Brady, if not is the greatest leader in sports ever, he's up there.
Right.
He was the buffer in the locker room. When the quote-unquote trouble player would come to the locker room, he'd say, hey, this is the locker close to Tom. Yeah, this is the way we do it here, and I know it's not great, but just swallow it. Just accept it, because we're going to go win.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to win Super Bowls if we kind of live by his rules.
Right.
And I'm willing to live by his rules if you guys are.
Right.
Let's just do this together. Okay, that guy's gone. Now Cam assumes the leadership position,
right,
and he's 9 years in Carolina.
Right.
So he doesn't know the Patriot way. He was never, like, leadership is not his strength, because Cam's kind of a solo act, but it's an MVP solo act because he can lead by example on the field.
Right.
He can make plays that lead you to wins, that lead you to a Super Bowl, right?
Right.
He got to a Super Bowl. They didn't win it. They didn't play great in the Super Bowl, but he got you there with a 15-1 season.
Right.
Okay. So can he be a locker room force? Never been his strength. So can he sort of fill the shoes in the locker room of Tom Brady? I don't think so. I want Cam, for his sake, to be Cam.
That's the only person he can be.
You have to be. I think it's up to Bill Belichick to sort of bite his lip and look the other way and let this man do what he does, because now he is in the leadership position.
The question is, Skip, is the behavior that player is exhibiting, is it detrimental to the team? I think the thing is, when I look at Randy Moss had lost respect for his head coach. He never gave Denny Green those problems.
Mm.
Those problems came with Mike Tyson. When he went to Oakland, I don't know, not necessarily sure he respected the head coach. He goes to Coach Belichick. He has the utmost respect because Coach Belichick is a 3-time Super Bowl winning head coach.
Mm-hmm.
His record precedes it. So you go in there, you know what the expectations are. And granted, the locker room, Skip, the locker room does the policing, not the head coach.
Mm.
You get Corey Dillon.
Yep.
Everybody know everybody says all these bad things. But and you think about it, Skip, Randy had a history at two different places. Cam, if the only thing you said about Cam, he's flashy. He's arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
He makes it all about him. If that's the only thing you say, they're getting a very good player there. If that's all, if that's the only negative you can say.
Well, again, he doesn't have any off-the-field issues at all.
It's given
that
thing,
I know of.
I don't know. Look, I watch players run out.
Cam did have the thing at Florida.
Okay,
he got kicked out,
right,
but then he went to Blinn and won the national championship. Went to Auburn and won the national championship. So just for the record.
Skip, I played 14 years in the NFL, and I want fans, if they allow you in the stadiums this year, you watch the best players, and you watch how they run on the field when they come out for warm-ups.
I'm with you.
Watch Deion's. I wish you could go back and watch Deion, or watch a Reggie, or watch a LT, and watch the great players, and watch how they carry themselves. They knew.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bad, I'm so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Just with Jerry. I just wish, I'm just, so now in today's time.
Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
Watch those guys. Watch the top players. and watch how they run on the field.
Watch Michael Irvin. Mm-hmm. Nope, I agree. I do think this is going to be a culture clash, and it's going to be fascinating to see if Belichick can sort of mellow a little bit and say, I got to give him a little bit of room to be himself.
As long as it's not causing a detriment to the locker room. Mm-hmm. Coach, but look, Skip, look at Gronk. Gronk's, you know, his college behavior. But Coach Belichick, that's not causing a disruption to the team.
No.
As long as you're not causing a disruption to the team, I believe Coach Belichick is going to let a guy be himself. But when it's become, and you know, your behavior become a detriment to the team, well, I can't have that. Mm. And you got to go. Skip, I mean, he can make up to $7 million. What'd they give Cam? Maybe $2 million? So it's not a lot of money.
No.
And that's what Coach Belichick like. Coach Belichick like having that because if you give him a problem, he trading you, he getting you up out of there quick.
Mm. So those Patriot fans, they will love this Superman routine after he scores touchdowns.
But if
as long as he scores touchdowns.
But just know, Cam, you score mm-hmm. a couple of touchdowns, you win.
Yep.
They gonna love you. Mm-hmm. You score a couple of picks and you lose, you probably gonna get the end bomb. So just prepare yourself.
It's got potential.
Yeah, that's all you gotta do is you understand what you're getting into, Skip. It's mm-hmm. okay.
Okay. Here we go.
Out of pressure.
No mercy.
According to reports, the Lakers are expected to sign J.R. Smith after guard Avery Bradley opted out of returning to play this season. J.R. hasn't played an NBA game in over a year, but has continued to work out and play basketball. On Danny Green's latest podcast, he said of J.R., quote, he shot the ball well. He looks in pretty good shape. Fox Sports NBA analyst Chris Broussard joining us now. Good to have you, Chris. So, question for you. Will J.R. fit with LeBron's Lakers?
He'll fit. Yeah, he'll fit fine. Look, it is a plus that he's already played with LeBron because adjusting to playing with LeBron can take some time for guys that have never done it. So he'll know where to expect the ball, where to be at on the floor, how to play off of a guy that's that ball dominant. Those are all pluses. And I get the signing. There really wasn't much else out there. But I have to be honest. I think some people, the hype and the attention that this signing has gotten, I think is utterly ridiculous. Like, some people are talking about JR joining the Lakers like he's about to be the third cog in a new big three. I'm like, can we slow down a bit? Look, JR is going to be 35 in September. That's when they'll still be playing games. JR has played 15 NBA seasons, hasn't played in almost 2 years. And even when JR was at his best, he was always a streaky shooter. You know, he wasn't one of those like a Klay Thompson, Ray Allen, a surefire shooter. He would get hot and he would be streaky. So can I see him hitting a big shot or two in a playoff game, maybe going on a little roll in one of those games? Yeah, I guess. But here's the question. Will LeBron trust JR or even want him to be on the floor in big moments? Considering what we saw a few years ago at Golden State, I think it boils down to this for Lakers fans, guys. At the end of the day and at the end of games, the Lakers are going to have to look to KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Alex Caruso, or maybe Rondo, if he can turn into playoff Rondo at times. Those are the guys that are going to have to really fill the void left by Avery Bradley. Mm-hmm. Because I just don't know that you're going to be able to count on JR to do that.
I echo a lot of what you said earlier, Chris, because he has played with LeBron. LeBron knows where JR needs the ball in his pocket. JR is a great bad shot taker, bad shot maker. If the shot clock's running down, throw the ball to JR. If he's falling out of bounds into the first row, that's the shot you want JR Smith to take. But the question I also have is that when you look at it, KCP, Danny Green, they signed Deion Waiters, Alex Caruso, as you mentioned, not JR. All of those guys are kind of like similar in size and basically play the same position. So how much time is JR actually going to get considering that LeBron's last year in Cleveland, he played about 28 minutes a game. Well, Avery Bradley was playing about 24, 25 minutes. I don't see how he comes in and gets that amount of time and he was only giving them 8 points. But I agree with you. If he could have one game or two games where he hits a tough three or he hits a clutch shot or he gets going, because if he gets going, he's, as you said, Chris, he's streaky beyond streaky. He can go 5-6 in about a 6-7 minute span. He can hit 5 or 6 threes. You remember in game 7, Golden State in the finals, they came back from 3-1. Golden State was starting to push out in front of them. They had got a double-digit lead, and then JR goes bang, 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 and they're right back in it. So he has that ability. The question that I have, how many minutes is he going to get, and who is he going to be getting those minutes with? Mm.
So, my turn. Chris Broussard, to your point, they just replaced Avery Bradley with J.R. Smith. To me, that is a downgrade, and I want to be clear about this. I've been around J.R. enough off the floor. I like him. I believe in his guts and his fearlessness, and he will take and make difficult late clock, late game shots. Streaky, but still fearless in taking and making those shots. My question is, you're replacing a stable cog as a starter in the offense, a man in Avery Bradley who made two all-defensive teams, who will take and make big threes from often on passes from LeBron. He started 44 games for you, and all of a sudden, after J.R. Smith has been out of basketball for 619 days since his last NBA game, are you going to throw him into the starting lineup for a suddenly playoff favorite in the West? I don't know. I asked Shannon earlier.
No.
Are you gonna start JR? And he said no. And I said, okay, somebody's got to take Avery's place. Who is it? KCP in the starting lineup?
KCP.
Okay. Is it Kuzma?
I think it's KCP.
Okay. Do you take Kuzma and the electricity he brings with the shock troops coming in with the second team? He is the leader of the second team. Do you take that away from the rotation? I don't think you need to do that. I think you're going to have to go with KCP in the starting lineup. But I'm going to remind everybody, the Lakers beat the Clippers one time in three tries, and it was because Avery Bradley made six threes in that game. He made four in the third quarter while LeBron James was scoring 0 points. They needed Avery to get over the hump to beat the Clippers one time in three tries, and he is not there anymore, so I'm with you, Chris, and I appreciate the fact that you brought up. Let's not exactly start making JR the third part of the big three here.
No, I'm with you guys. And you guys know I picked the Clippers. Sorry, Shannon, on this, but it was two reasons. Look, obviously the Lakers have two of the three best players in these two teams, right? And LeBron, Kawhi, and then Anthony Davis. But I think the Clippers' depth and their dog factor. You know, I think they're hungry as LeBron is for this fourth ring. I just think up and down the roster, the Clippers have more dogs. And Avery was one of those dogs that LeBron could count on. We don't want to overstate how good he is. It's not an insurmountable loss, but he was a dog. He could defend. And like Skip said, he was 3-D. And he actually was shooting the three really well in February and March. Mm-hmm. So it's a loss. And I don't know how much JR is going to play. Remember, they chose Deion Waiters over him late in the season. They tried both of them out. So I don't know if we're going to see him on the floor a lot.
But look, I get it, Chris. You got the Clippers. You want to stay with your pick. But you do understand that we're a restaurant, and we got our house specialty. Now, we add a little couple of things to the menu. Yeah, we added Deion Waiters. Yeah, we added JR. But you know what our specialty is. And when you come to our restaurant, you come to order LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Don't forget that. Okay? Just so we clear.
I hear you. Anthony Davis, I was saying it all year. He's got to be huge in the fourth quarters. And he wasn't most of the season. He was getting there late. Because with the Clippers' defense and the number of guys they can throw on LeBron, they were able, in those first two games, to keep him from living at the rim and getting in the paint at will. That means AD's going to have to step up, and I don't know if he's going to be able to do it.
You do remember, though, you will have a last game? They threw Paul George at him, took him. Took Kawhi, took him. Took the other twin, took him. Took Harkless, took him. You remember? I know you grew up. You were a Bruce Lee fan. You remember they used to throw all them guys at Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee whip all their tail, right? You remember that, Chris? Same thing gonna happen.
Except for Brad Pitt, and once in a while, Time in Hollywood. If you saw that movie.
Yeah, that is.
One time he did
most jump shots, but in this case,
he didn't whip him. Okay,
the mid-range. He likes to dribble into...
Chris Broussard, I got to bring up one other...
You know, maybe Thank one you. Dribble, one step...
...angle here, which you may or may not like.
You know what I mean? Like, LeBron's not a
Mike. But speaking of the quote...
...tremendous jump shooter, so he has to be in the rhythm...
...unquote GOAT, LeBron James.
And right where he was at that moment...
Who has been his favorite scapegoat?
He was not in, like, where he liked...
...over the years he had him in Cleveland.
...has to be as far as getting in a rhythm for him.
And it was J.R. Smith, because...
...his jump shot, not to mention, as I said...
J.R. loves LeBron, and he will take...
George Hill was wide open.
...take it from LeBron. It was his fault in LeBron.
Like he was, and he got fouled. He's an 80% free...
LeBron will, J.R. will say, yep.
Thank you.
You got me. I screwed up.
I can't fault LeBron for that. That was a good play.
A brain freeze, and it takes me back to...
And George Hill just didn't
time out.
Deliver.
Is game number one, down the stretch. George Hill, an 80% free throw shooter with stretch at Oakland of the 2018 game one on the line at Oakland in finals. And if we could see that against the prohibitive favorites, no. He's probably one more time again. J.R. 50% free throw shooter.
Oh, my goodness.
And those Smith took LeBron off the hook here. Circumstances. LeBron could have done by becoming the scapegoat for what happened. What, taking one dribble to his left, one little jab at the end of the game because LeBron, jab step, gone up, Jordan S. Take the shot! LeBron has, dare I say, on Brian Russell, and a shot to win the game guarded by little Dale the jump shot to win game one. Little tiny Steph Curry. He is hot. And then my partner actually might have handed. He has scored 49 points. A little bit of a debate that maybe he's most of them from distance outside could get in the GOAT conversation. The paint. And LeBron fails to rise.
Chris, you hear me talking about.
Oh, he rise and shoot a jump shot. To
scapegoat to JR. Skip.
Win the game down one at Oakland.
Chris, that'd be like you. You on live television.
Where they could have stolen game one.
Television, and all of a sudden you get up and start going.
Instead, what? LeBron just...
The kitchen to start making breakfast, forget you on live.
Decided to pass to George Hill.
Television. J.R. Smith forgot he was in the NBA game.
So that he's going to have to shoot the two free throws?
Hey, he got the ball and ran out. And he's like, what?
To win the game, obviously missed the second one.
I thought we... No!
J.R. did have a mental blunder.
How you going to scapegoat something?
You're a brain freeze, and that
can't scapegoat someone that actually
was the end of that because LeBron quit going.
Did the thing that we're scapegoating you for. There is no
to overtime, as we saw in the interim.
Scapegoating. JR, you blew it. How you
before overtime?
You gonna scapegoat that, Skip?
Okay, but you're
Skip, that was a layup. Look at that.
Tied going to overtime of game one.
Cut. Mm. He should have had a layup.
And LeBron sits apart from the...
And here's the other thing with LeBron. Let's think about...
...team during the timeout and basically said...
...when he hits his most jump shots...
I don't want to associate with them.
Skip, stop saying that.
But in this case, a mid-range, he likes to...
Chris, we're looking... If you can see this in the monitor...
...dribble into it with, you know...
There's one empty seat between LeBron and JR.
Okay, but he's not in the middle. Jordan would have been right in the middle of everybody saying, okay, we got exactly what we wanted. We are tied going to overtime. Give me the damn ball and get out of my way. And LeBron said, I don't want any part of this. I won't even shoot for the first 2.5 minutes of overtime until we're down 7. He scored no field goals in overtime, made 2 free throws. Way to go, LeBron.
He tried to make...
I'll give you that LeBron's body language wasn't good, but here's what's running through his head, and you know this. They had no margin for error in this series. We all knew they were most likely going to get beat and swept by the Warriors. No margin for error. They had the game in hand, and they let it go, and that's what LeBron's thinking. We talked about this. JR admitted it. We talked about this in the huddle, and he just forgot. That's what frustrated LeBron so much. It was like, we're about to steal one, and now maybe we can go ahead and ride this thing like we did in 2016, but it was all lost on a brain freeze by his man, JR.
Okay, so if JR gives the ball back to LeBron, what's LeBron going to do with it? Pass it to George Hill again?
No, seriously.
What's he going to do? Is he going to shoot it?
I was thinking, like, he's 4 feet from the basket. How about putting the ball in the hoop? Right. Is that a novel idea at a basketball game? I thought the objective was to put the ball in the hoop in a basketball game.
Who knew? And Skip, you said JR's got the guts, right?
He does.
To take the big shot. Why didn't he do it right there?
Okay, it was a great offensive rebound on Kevin Durant that he got. So I will give you that. That's the JR package. You got to take the good with the really bad.
Okay.
But he is the all-time scapegoat for the quote-unquote GOAT. He took him right off the hook.
He did. Hold up. How are we going to scapegoat somebody that did what we're alleging he did? Right. That's not scapegoat.
Yeah, but LeBron didn't do what he should have done. Make the shot. If you're that guy.
It was a great pass, Skip. You know that. You know that.
All right, Chris. Thank you for joining us this morning. Always good to have you.
No mercy.
And July 12th, NASCAR Cup Series action takes off from Kentucky Speedway at 2:30 Eastern on FS1. Then, for the first time ever on July 15th, the NASCAR All-Star Race takes on the short track at Bristol Motor Speedway. See all your favorite drivers in action beginning at 8:30 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. When the NBA season resumes, players will reportedly be allowed to put specialized messages on their jerseys for social justice causes. The league will also reportedly be painting Black Lives Matter on all courts. Raptors guard Fred VanVleet gave a very honest opinion about returning, saying the timing, quote, sucks. VanVleet continued saying he thought the right thing to do was to play, but also admitted that if even enough players decided to sit out, then he would have done the same. So, Shannon, question for you. If you were an NBA player right now, would you have mixed emotions about playing?
Absolutely would. The question is, would a 52-year-old Shannon Sharpe play? No, 52-year-old Shannon Sharpe wouldn't play. 25-year-old Shannon Sharpe would have needed to play. Shannon Sharpe at 25 had three kids, had a grandma and a sister that was needed to see Shannon Sharpe support.
Okay.
So financially, Skip, I would have had no choice.
How passionately you believe in the new Black Lives Matter cause.
Yes.
So I know how conflicted you would have been even at 25, right?
Absolutely, Skip. But even at the cause, I had put myself and assumed responsibility for people that were counting on me. And I understand that my community was counting on me also.
Correct.
But the first obligation, it was to the family.
Yep.
And then I would deal with what I needed to do with the community after that. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I would have been very conflicted. And I love Fred VanVleet's honesty because he's absolutely 1,000% right. He has an obligation to his family, and he understands that this comes at a very trying time. That what we see going on in America and around the world, and we see the movement and the steam that this thing has picked up, and you don't want to lose that, Skip. You don't want to lose that momentum. And he's like, man, we're going to lose. I know we're going to lose some of this momentum. And it's sad that that's what's going to happen. And, Skip, I get all the symbolic gestures. Planning the court, Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Skip, I get that, taking down the statues and no more Auntie Mama.
By the way, each player on his back, no name,
right.
But you can have your own personalized.
Your cause. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I get that, Skip, taking down the Confederate statues and Auntie Mama and no more Uncle Ben's. Mm-hmm. Skip, those are symbolic gestures. What Black America really want is economic equality and real justice. That's what we want.
Yep.
And if in the process of we gaining that, you remove these symbolic gestures, make these symbolic gestures, okay. But economic equality and real justice, that's what we want.
Gotcha. So Fred VanVleet, a deep thinker, said, and I quote, "We all know the right thing to do is to not play, to take a stand." So Fred VanVleet is not a superstar in this league, but he's speaking his heart. He is perfectly expressing the conflict that's going on inside all kinds of NBA players.
I think a lot of players feel the exact same way that Fred VanVleet, but he verbalized it.
Okay, what's your gut feeling on the way the best player, in your opinion, LeBron James, what conflict is he feeling in his heart right now?
Honestly, I believe LeBron James says, I can play and still bring about the change necessary for America to be what I think America should be.
Okay, because LeBron doesn't need the money to play. Again, his stature as a player is hanging in the balance because he has a chance with a very good basketball team to go win a championship right now.
Right.
So does that mean as much as the cause means to him? How do you think he's juggling that in his head right now?
I think he said it before. I think when he built that school, the I Promise Will Help, and he said that's probably a greater accomplishment or achievement than anything he's done in the game of basketball.
Okay.
You know, Skip, and Fred VanVleet also said, he said, this is a long-term thing here. Mm-hmm. You can't be in this for the short term. And it's not about 1 year or 2 years, Skip. This thing is going to project out over an extended period of time. And, Skip, what they're going to have to do, because eventually you can protest and you can make brain awareness all you want to, but they're going to have to put this in the hand of politicians. And what they're going to have to do, if you look at who endorses certain politicians, you look at who accepts money from the NRA. You look at who accepts money from Facebook and Google and all these corporations. So that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to go, because Google ain't there protesting. The NRA ain't in the streets. They got lobbyists. And they're going, okay, now this is what we're going to do. This is what we need you to do. Now, Skip, this is not very, you know, when you do social activism, Skip, it doesn't pay really. It doesn't pay. Really, most of these things are nonprofit. Mm-hmm. You know, Google can give somebody that's working up for you. They can give Senator McConnell, if he got a kid, they can give him a job. Mm-hmm. And Facebook can give you a job. NRA can give you a job. I mean, how many people say, well, yeah, you know, that's what I want. You know, I got a degree from Harvard or Yale or from, you know, some HBCU. And what I want to do is social activism. Doesn't pay well. So that's what you're going to have to do, Skip. You're going to have to get people that do this for a living, that go to these politicians and says, okay, buddy, this is what we need.
Okay.
Like you did this for the NRA, like you did this for Facebook and Apple and Google, we need the same kind of people standing up there fighting for us, trying to get bills, legislation passed that's going to help these causes.
Okay. So the question becomes, number one, obviously you cannot let BLM fade. You can't refocus on basketball to the detriment of this cause. But can you do both? Can you maximize, capitalize on the stage in the contained sort of, you know, bubble, if you will, in Orlando? Can you take that stage, which America is just starved for, and maximize the impact of the stage for the cause as well as playing basketball to entertain people, right?
Yes.
Can you? Yes, I believe you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be a great stage. I believe LeBron will capitalize on the stage. He will seize the stage. He'll be doing interviews at shoot-arounds and post-game, and I think he will be great at that. I think he will be powerful.
Give you an example, I believe Muhammad Ali would have fought had they let him while he was going through this process, but he couldn't fight.
Right.
They said, you cannot fight. I believe Muhammad Ali would have still fought while dealing with what he had to deal with.
But he was just a conscientious objector.
Right.
You're talking about, I don't have any quarrel with them Viet Cong, right?
Right.
So he said, I'm not going to Vietnam.
Right. But I'm saying, though, Skip, they said they outlawed where he couldn't fight.
Yeah.
So I believe even though while he wasn't going through that, while it was being played out through the Supreme Court, I believe he would have fought if he could have had an opportunity.
Okay,
he didn't stop fighting because he wanted to.
But for 3 years, Ali traveled the country and spoke for his cause at the time. And he was sort of a lone wolf in the cause.
Right.
But he spoke for rights, for racial rights in America. And he was a trailblazer in the 3 years he could not fight.
That was with Dr. King, he protested, but he still got up in that pulpit on Sunday.
Yes, he did.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so that didn't take away from what he was doing. I don't believe this is going to take away from the cause. I believe, now, if you don't believe that, Skip, I'm not judging you if you don't believe that. Mm-hmm. Some people believe that they have to have a singular focus in order to accomplish the goal that they want to. I got no problem with that. Mm-hmm. LeBron James believed that I've been doing this long enough that I can do two things and do these things equally effective. Some people says, no, I just need to focus on one thing. You take a mile more. Who stepped away from the WNBA.
She did.
You look at Renee Montgomery. You look at some of the Chaney Abumake. She's stepping away and says, nah, I need to focus on this.
Sure.
This is too important of an issue. This is more important than basketball. Got no problem with it. Bless their heart. I'm glad. But I believe that, Skip, this is going to be projected out over an extended period of time. And at the end of the day, Skip, protesting, but we're going to have to get in front of the politician.
Okay,
you're going to have to get
your... fine. I disqualified myself early on, and I told you, selfishly, I want them to play basketball.
Right.
I think there's a part of you that wants them to play basketball.
Sure.
We miss it dearly. They're not good at it. They're great at it. So, again, do we need a little diversion? Do we need entertainment? Do we need some hope to help ease us through the pandemic, maybe even out of the pandemic by the end of the playoffs? Is it possible? Sure. That's what Adam Silver said in his address, that, I think it was on ESPN, where he was saying, we feel like it's our responsibility to do what we do best, which is to play basketball. Again, Fred VanVleet is saying, well, yeah, but we don't, not to the detriment of taking the focus off what we also do very well, which is campaign for this cause. Right. We are some of the most powerful voices in all of this country. Well, again, hand in hand, maybe. Maybe you can use your vocal cords while you're in Orlando playing basketball and doing what you do great.
I believe you can do both, Skip, and hopefully these guys can do both and this cause. But at the end of the day, Skip, I've heard a lot of corporations, Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Our brothers have been for 400 years. I'm going to see your hiring practices. I'm going to see the diversity that you implement and to see if the rhetoric that you spew, if it's backed up by your actions. That's what I'm going to be looking for. Now, I heard what you're saying.
Yep.
There's a lot, Skip, there on IG and on Twitter, and you see all these comments and pay, taking out ads and everything.
Yep.
I'm going to see. Because I see better than I hear.
Yep. I got you. No mercy.
Tom Brady posted a trailer for his new Apple TV series, Greatness Code. And in the trailer, LeBron is a guest and says his career-defining moment was Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Celtics in 2012. Brady said his was a 56-10 regular season blowout of the Bills in 2007 that helped the Patriots go 16-0 during the regular season. So, Shannon, how surprised are you by Brady's defining moment?
I'm very surprised, Skip, because at that point, Tom Brady had already won three Super Bowls. He was already a two-time Super Bowl MVP and regarded as one of the top two or three quarterbacks in all of football, he, Peyton Manning, at that time. So, I'm very surprised in this game, 8 years into his career, 56-10. I'm shocked, actually. I'm shocked, Skip, because it's so late in his career. And, Skip, I remember I was thinking to myself, I'm like, when? And for me, it wasn't a game. It was a play, and it was my rookie year. We're playing the Kansas City Chiefs, and Dan says, you know, we're gonna put you out to go one-on-one. I'm like, one-on-one against who? Now, at the time, Skip, they had arguably the best two duo cornerbacks. Albert Lewis was on one side. Kevin Ross, they call him the Rock. Now, I'm studying him on tape, and I hear the receivers that we got, they're talking about, like, man, if he get his hands on you, it's over. Because he was short, but he was strong. He was powerful. And Dan's like, yeah, we're going to put you out. We're going to throw you the fade on it. I'm like, really? So we practice it. And Johnson's like, okay, I'm going to throw it like this here. You know, I want you to just go up and get it. I was like, okay. Sure enough, Skip, they call it a game. I started tight. I motion out. Rock goes with me. They throw it up. I go over the top of him and catch it. At that moment, Skip, we lost the game. I'm thinking to myself, I can be more than just a special teams player. I just be the guy that went to the Pro Bowl last year. A lot of guys, they're afraid to go against this guy. And I just caught a touchdown on him. From that moment on, Skip, something came over me like, I belong. I can play really well. And for Tom, and that was in my rookie season. Tom Brady is 8 years into his career. He's a three-time Super Bowl champ. He's a two-time Super Bowl MVP. And he says, that was the game that I knew that I was special. That was the game that I knew, Skip, that I could be really, really good. That was my defining moment of the game. And I'm like, I'm shocked because 8 years, Skip, that's a lot of games into a career before you realize I'm special or I can be really good.
So there Shannon Sharp goes again, putting himself in the same sentence with Tom Brady, the GOAT. This question wasn't about Shannon Sharp's defining moment. It was about the GOAT's defining moment.
But, Skip, that's what I'm saying.
All right, I got it. I think you're, once again, when it comes to Brady, missing the boat and the point here. This is the game he looks back at and says, that night was the closest I ever came to perfection. He had the ball seven times in that game. He scored touchdowns on all seven drives. The last drive went to the backup quarterback, Matt Cassel, and they did not score. But Tom had it seven times and went 49 points out of seven possessions. again, it was at Buffalo on a Sunday night. Mm-hmm. They were 9-0. Mm-hmm. Buffalo had won 4 in a row, but was still not a great team because that made Buffalo 5-4 at that point. Mm-hmm. So it's not like an arch rival within right. the division. Not a real threat to lose, although you could have made a case maybe they would pull off the upset. But the opposing quarterback was one J.P. Lossman, and I don't think he's going to out-duel Tom Brady exactly. on Sunday Night
right.
Football.
Right.
So I will give you that. But Brady goes 31 of 39 for 373, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, QBR of 9.9. So scale of 0 to 100, he's just 1 point off real statistical perfection
right.
because he did miss eight throws, were misfires right. for whatever reason. But he threw 4 touchdown passes to the greatest, to me, deep threat who ever stepped on a yeah. football field, Randy Moss. Randy had touchdown passes of 43, 17, 16, and 6. Wes Welker caught 7 more for 78. Dante Stallworth caught 5 more for 56. It's just boom, bing, boom, bam, bam. He just shredded the Bills' defense, and I'm not saying it was a great defense, but every read, every throw in his mind was about as close to perfect as he could make it.
Right.
They defended some weren't caught, whatever.
Right.
But for him, in his head, I can't play any better than I played that night where everything broke exactly right. Well, you're looking at it through the goat's eyes,
right.
right?
Right.
So it wasn't a Super Bowl. It wasn't the AFC Championship game. It was just a Sunday night, November 18th.
Right.
It was 36 degrees, so it wasn't freezing cold, but it was pretty chilly. The wind was 10 miles an hour,
right.
so it was a little breezy. It gets breezy up there in Baltimore.
I think the thing that I remember, Skip, if I'm not mistaken, that was also the day T.O. had, I think, 3 receiving touchdowns earlier in the day.
Okay.
And then Randy came back that night and had 4 receiving touchdowns.
And you're talking about for my Dallas Cowboys?
For your Dallas Cowboys. If I'm okay. not mistaken, Skip, you have to look that up.
You but would be right.
Skip, see, the thing is, for me, I was thinking that a game where he's going against Peyton Manning.
No, I got
and he outduels Peyton, or he's going to, I'm trying to think, 2007, who was another, Drew Brees, but I don't think they had played at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm talking about, you know, and I get it, Skip, for a game, if you want to say, this was the game that I felt like I was perfect. This was, you know, and I think there might be some games, Skip, that he might have a better, he might have been like 34, 38. There might have been some games that he had fewer incompletions.
Well, his defining moment, as in yours,
yeah.
would have happened in the first Super Bowl
right.
where Belichick let the ball be in his
right.
hands down the stretch
right.
when John Madden's upstairs in the press box
right.
on national TV saying, they got to shut it yeah. down. Just play for yeah. overtime.
A second-year guy, and he leaves him on a game,
right.
a drive that puts him in field goal
and
range.
And completed 5
yeah.
passes
yeah.
in a drive.
So that's what
okay.
I'm thinking. Skip,
that would be defining.
So young. But you look at a situation where Tom Brady's 8 years into his career and he's accomplished what he's okay. accomplished at that point in time. That's why it's so hard for me to believe. I'm like, wow, you're this late in your career and you still haven't don't feel you've had a defining moment mm-hmm. that you could like, nah, it was the game against Peyton. Nah, it was a game that we were behind by 10 and we got the ball mm-hmm. back with like 4 minutes and we couldn't make it won the game.
Yep.
So if
okay.
You know, for me, I would like to hear some of the other guys. I'd like to hear Peyton or John Elway or some of the other great.
We did hear LeBron's, and I completely agree with that because it was that game 6 in 2012 at Boston.
Oh, the one he was supposed to crumble in, right? Mm-hmm. The fourth quarter?
Well, I think the whole world was waiting for, are you going to be able to pull this off? Because he had crumbled against Orlando. He had crumbled against Boston in his last go-round in Cleveland. He had really melted down against Dallas in the NBA Finals the previous year. And here we went again. Game 6, you're in trouble at Boston. And he annihilated.
Yeah, we're in no trouble. We set this up.
Annihilated.
You do realize, Skip, we had made amends for what happened in Boston in 2010.
Mm.
Because we had, in 2011, went there and beat the brakes off
them. Mm.
You do realize that. 4-1.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did to him. A okay. gentleman's sweep.
And then what happened in the finals?
We lost to Dallas.
Yeah.
But that ain't got nothing to do with Boston.
What happened in games 4, 5, and 6?
We lost. We didn't play
it
well.
It's all about LeBron on the hot seat.
LeBron,
are you that dude or not that
LeBron
dude?
LeBron did not play well. There's no excuses. He's made mm-hmm. it abundantly clear. But say, can you name another final? I mean, so if you're going to say the guy's been to 8, 9 finals, and he didn't play well in 1 finals.
Mm.
Wow.
Hmm. Well, he didn't play well in 2010 against Boston in 4, 5, and 6.
Oh, my goodness.
When they had to plant the story that he was sedated in the locker room before those games.
Ain't nobody planted no story. I haven't heard that story.
And how about after he hit the shot heard around the world against Orlando and then games 4, 5, and 6? It disappeared, shrank.
It is shrank.
Okay.
I mean, it's shrank and it's 35-9-8.
I can tell you that a lot of the national reporters went to that game in Boston. A lot of them from ESPN drove over to Boston because they were on the edge of their seat to say, is this going to be LeBron's night or his collapse? Will this be the end of LeBron James as we knew and loved him?
Well,
rose and shown, what do you have, 45?
45, 15, and 5.
Woo!
And they called the dogs off.
Yeah.
They called the dogs off. You shouldn't let him get 50.
Really?
You shouldn't let him put 50 on Paul on the truth head. Mm. That's what should have happened. Remember all that talking.
Yeah, then they went back home and had an easy game 7. And then
it wasn't no easy. It was close down the stretch.
Oh, was it? I don't remember.
Yeah.
And then they had a cakewalk in the finals against the Baby Thunder.
Oh, they Baby Thunder.
And what did LeBron say when it was over? It's about damn time, right?
So not in the Baby Thunder.
Well, they were the Baby Thunder.
I mean, they got 3 MVPs on that team.
Baby James, Baby Ross, Baby K.
But I noticed you didn't say that when your Spurs beat the baby calves. Mm. You didn't mention nothing about no baby calf. A 22-year-old LeBron James by himself. You didn't mention anything about no baby.
LeBron looked 22 when he was 14. Well, am I right? He looked like a...
No. You saw that showing on him. And they asked him, say, you want to be... Kobe came and spoke to him. He said, you want to be like Kobe? He said, no, I want to be GOAT. I want to be LeBron.
Really?
I want to win championships like him, but I want to be LeBron James.
I still don't know how he got swept by the Spurs if he's that guy. First finals?
Your guy got swept twice in the first round. About to be 3-7. How do you do that?
Scared him to death.
Though. And no, they wasn't scared at all. Wasn't scared at all.
God disguised as Michael Jordan.
And he missed a shot. Did you know, Skip, in that first game, in that 63-point game, he had a shot to win the game.
Yeah, and then what happened? He made those 2 free throws to sew it up.
He wasn't supposed to be there. He's supposed to win that in regulation.
Good luck. No mercy.